Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 442, recorded January 19th, 2025.
And today we're getting to do the two ongoings with Star Trek Defiant number 22 and Star Trek 27.
Yep, they still got their independent stories that eventually come together, but not right now. And actually, considering what's happening in the 2022 storyline, which is basically the multiverse is gone, and really it's just the Theseus and Sisko and company left, as far as we know, it's kind of funny reading the Defiant one where, yeah, there's some things that are hinting at what's on the horizon, but, you know, things are more or less, you know, normal in the Milky Way.
Right. You're thinking that they should be all dead. They should just be, when you bought Defiant, it should just be 22 pages of black.
Of dead. Just of like, dead. Of dead.
Blank page, blank page, blank page. That was $5 black. Well spent.
Black.
Yeah.
Black
just,
pages.
Just nothingness.
Nothingness.
Yeah. That would be a move for IDW to put out something like that.
Now, I wasn't suggesting they do that. I'm just saying you got one reality going on in the one book and then your sister ongoing franchise, which is going on that are tied together typically are a bit askew at the moment. Time-wise.
Right. Yeah. It's all timey-wimey.
Exactly.
Plus, isn't Sisko and stuff, they're in the future, right? Then when they came from the Kelvin universe, they went far in the future, but it was after it was all destroyed? Or am I misremembering? I thought there was some sort of time travel shenanigans when they rode that wave out.
I don't know about time travel, but, I mean, you know, they're jumping between dimensions or realities or whatever we're supposed to call these things now, you know, universes. I don't know. I mean, they're jumping between all this stuff with the Wesley Crusher, whatever drive they're calling it now. So who knows what's going on? And then technically speaking, they went back in time to be linking up with Kirk and company, right?
Yeah. In the Kelvin universe. You know,
Exactly. Yeah. So They're just doing what they want to do.
Yeah. They're making it up as they go along.
Yeah. But one of the first things we see in Defiant, and then one of the last things we see in Defiant, the bookends of the book, you know, I mean, that's got to be insinuating the end of the universe, right?
I think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So as we'll see when you do the synopsis.
Well. You want to do yours first, the 27?
Why not? Okay. So I'm doing the Star Trek 2022, issue number 27, When the Walls Fell, Part 3. Even though they referred to it as Last Supper in issue 26, but I think they were just referring to something that happens in this issue. So the title is still When the Walls Fell, Part 3. And this is a published date of December 2024. And creative team is a lot of the same folks, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Artist Mike Feehan and Tess Fowler. Colorist Lee Lowridge. Letterer Clayton Cowles. Design and production Neil Yataki. Group editor Heather Antos. Editorial assistant Cassandra Jones. Got three covers. Cover A presents Sisko looking out a window at the Prophet's stable wormhole, which I guess presents his godlike prophet half. And then in his right hand, he's holding a baseball, which I guess represents his human half, since he's kind of a 50-50 guy, a half-breed. Art by Ramon Rosanas and colors by Lee Lowridge. Cover B features The Last Supper with Captain Sisko at the head of the table, holding a big pot of jambalaya and his bridge crew seated around the table. Spot is running across the table with a stolen shrimp in his mouth, causing howls of derisive laughter. Art is by Mike Feehan. Cover R1A presents, for some strange reason, Chris Pine as Kirk, Quinto Spock, and Saldana O'Hara head and shoulder drawings with the space background, and then there's like these streaks cutting across it. So really, this cover kind of seems like a leftover from issue 26, but they got it with this one as the retailer incentive cover, and the art is by Jake Bartok. It looks quite nice. Just seems a little out of place. Ben Sisko is in his ready room, holding his baseball, looking out into the truly black, and contemplating how totally alone he and his crew really are. They are the last surviving vestiges of the multiverse that Lore swept into non-existence with his terrible weapon. He commends his crew for how they are taking the horror of their situation and not giving up. He looks at an image of his family and drives the innocent ball into his desk with force in a futile effort to expel his frustrations. He is called to the bridge, where he is shown the Prophet's stable wormhole still exists, but at 95,346 light years away from their current position, it might as well not exist. Eventually, they formulate a plan to use what little is left of their dilithium crystals and what they can recrystallize to channel enough power into the warp engines to hurl their little tin can across to the wormhole and hope for the best. Tom's piloting will be key, since once the engines are spent, they will need to coast the rest of the way and hit the entrance of the wormhole dead on. They make preparations and punch it. After the dilithium is spent, they somehow still maintain their warp bubble and can only wait until they arrive at their destination. Since there is nothing more they can do, Sisko invites his bridge crew to his quarters for supper at 1800 hours. The rest of the crew can fend for themselves via the replicators, damn it. They eat, drink, and for a time, take a break from the dire situation they are in. Sisko serves up a main course of jambalaya with Dr. Crusher's assistance. Daddy Paris feeds his daughter while she is more interested in Spot the cat. Data mostly plays with Spot. Scotty appears to get Teller drunk. Sato and Duchenne hit it off to a new level we have not seen before. Scotty proposes a very long toast that includes a melodic Scottish poem that brings Data to tears. After all, he is fully functional. Data inadvertently brings the evening to an end, observing all the family, friends, and famous people being mentioned in a game that the meat sacks are playing that no longer exist due to his brother's recent efforts. Everyone departs except for Sisko and Dr. Crusher. Big day tomorrow. Sisko and Crusher make vignettes and talk ex-spouses and trusting friends. Sisko ends the evening after finishing preparing the delectable desserts by stating his intention to take what is his by birthright and use the Prophet's incredible powers to save the universe and save his family. As far as we know, they did not boink, and Sisko just went to sleep. On the other hand, we do see a panel that shows two naked female forms enjoying each other's company in the shadows of someone's quarters. We see large gatherings of the crew drinking and enjoying each other's company before turning in for the evening. The next day, it's beignets on the bridge for all interested, and most are. Sisko sits down at the con and gives a heartfelt speech just before they enter the Prophet's wormhole. Fade to black. Cut to a scroll presenting the words of Trakor, Vedic of Hedraspool province on Bajor. after encountering the Orb of Change. It tells of a child being born of both the temple and a star. The star will raise the child, but the temple will call. The prophet's blessing will return to him the life he never knew, and so he will be called emissary. Through him, the prophet's divine plan will be brought to fruition, for the emissary is of the temple. Sisko awakens in his uniform and on his back in a totally different art style. He is in what appears to be a Bajoran village from the distant past. He stands as the villagers gawk at the strange being that does not quite look like a Bajoran, in very strange clothing, who just appeared before them. To be continued in Of Bajor.
Glad you mentioned the art style change.
Yeah.
Wonder why they did that.
I assume that's the lady that was mentioned in the credits. So Mike Feehan did most of it. And then I guess Tess Fowler did the last page or so. After Sisko was in was on Bajor apparently in the past.
Yeah, maybe.
And I assume Tess is going to do the artwork for the next issue, I guess.
Or maybe they'll have different art styles again.
Maybe.
Like for the Theseus crew, it's still the traditional, but then maybe his stuff will be this watercolor look.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
If he really did go back in time, then some of his mom's statements about you've already made the decision make a little bit more sense, because here he is in the past and something he's going to decide then will affect the future. So in that regards, they're kind of tying up a loose end from a previous issue.
Right.
You know, we thought it was just mumbo jumbo prophet speak or wormholian speak.
Well, I'm thinking, what the heck is Sisko going to do in the past, in Bajor's past, to make any difference in the current situation?
Right.
I mean, if he can somehow, I mean, what allowed all this to happen? The Orb of Destruction, right?
Right.
So technically speaking, if you can deny the Orb of Destruction to Kalis and then to Lore, then you might be able to stop all this from happening. But can you do that? I mean, everything's gone now. I mean, can you just go back in time? I mean, what version of time travel are we playing? What are the rules today?
Right. Yeah, and he wiped out all of reality. So he wiped out the past and the future, right? So there. So for Lore, there should not be a past where he could be thwarted. It's happened, and he's wiped it all out. It's a clean slate.
That's right. Timey-wimey stuff is always problematic when you try to have it make sense.
Yeah.
And definitely the whole idea that all of a sudden Sisko's in the past, apparently on Bajor, it's like...
And they've written, biblical text based on his arrival, so...
Oh, yes.
He really is coming in like he's the prophet of old, right? Especially that they show a cover for next issue, and oh my goodness, it looks like something that you would see in a stained glass window or something. You see Sisko with his arms outstretched and this light coming from behind him, and everybody's bowing down and stuff. It's just like, what kind of vibe they're trying to invoke there?
He looks rather Christ-like. So Christ never looked like that, but like kind of like what you'd kind of think Christ would be like.
Right.
You know? So I when I read this thing, it was like, you know, I never saw this before, but they seem to be trying to go for almost like a religious kind of thing. And I guess I never thought about it before, but as I mentioned to you before we started recording, Sisko is a little kind of sort of Christ-like. He's half wormhole alien prophet godlike thing, and he's half human.
Right.
And Christ was not a he was God, but born as a man. So that's not quite the same thing, but still. When they dress Sisko up like this, it's like, it's kind of on the nose.
In this, a little in this on next the nose.
Cover,
yeah. You know?
Anyway.
Yeah, definitely that page of text where it's like from an old Bible or a scroll or something. And then and then you see that page at the end, you're just like, oh, this next one's going to be really heavy into the religious allegory.
Right.
So, but it could work.
It could work. I sure hope it does. I really don't know what they're going to do to make it work for me, quite frankly.
Right.
But they could surprise me.
Yeah. I just hope they don't do what they did in Doctor Who, where he recreates the Big Bang. He has like Pandora's box or something, and
right,
he basically recreates the Big Bang with what he remembers the universe being like, and it just so it's all back, but he knows it's a little different. Yeah, I hated that
it's not the original one. Right. It's not the original.
Plus, it's such a cop out.
That was one of those extreme Matt Smith ones.
Right, it was.
But I wasn't too crazy about it.
So I really hope that's not what they do with this one, where he's like the prophet Sisko recreates the universe in his image kind of thing. I mean, that is basically what Lore's trying to do, right? Recreate the universe in his image, but
in his image, what he wants. Right.
But
right.
I don't want Sisko or somebody to jump in there and set it all exactly the way it was.
Well, what's going to be amazing is the universe isn't, right? And there's going to be this lore war thing. Well, where does the lore war take place? Everything's gone. I mean, is the lore war going to take place in the universe that lore makes? Because the regular multiverse is gone.
Right.
So Sisko and company will be able to come back into lore's universe and fight him and somehow turn it back to the way it was? That doesn't seem likely. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
We'll find out. Mm-hmm. So did you like the joke about the three Spocks?
Oh, was that between Scotty and Teller?
Yeah. You can bring three people to dinner. Right. And he was like, I want Spock.
I want all three Spocks.
And then he's like, well, you got to bring three different people. There's three Spocks. And then he's like laughing and you're just like, oh, my God. If you want to count all the baby Spocks, we have a lot more than three, but yes, there's three main Spocks.
Yes, and he's laughing,
reader.
He's laughing, and so Scotty got him drunk. Is that it?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm looking at that stupid smiling, grinning look on Talir's face. It's like, oh my gosh. So he is the joint being, right? So he's the original Vulcan Talir, and he's got the
Well, is he a joint being, or did she just change?
Or did she die?
I think she just took the form of Talir because she respected Spock so much. So I don't think there was a Talir, and then she took over his body. I think she just created Talir to be her new body.
Okay.
If I remember right.
Okay.
But
now, in a past issue. Vulcan. So in a past issue, didn't the original Aelborn's daughter? I forgot what her name was. Aelborn's daughter kind of came out of the Theseus and saved everybody.
Yeah.
So does she still exist?
I think she still exists.
She's Talir. And it's not a joined being, but it's all 100% her. She just made up Talir.
That's the way I always read it, that she had made him. She turned herself into Talir. Okay. She didn't like take over an existing person's body. But somehow she did use her powers or something to get out of the Pleroma. She somehow.
Yeah. Was that it?
Reinforced the shields or something so they could get out.
Right. Okay, but that's
her. You're right. They've never talked about it. They've never talked about it.
100% her.
What happened? Yeah.
Okay.
That's As far as I know, they haven't said otherwise.
Because they don't mention her. They just mention T'Lyra now.
Right.
Okay. Okay, I'm just a little confused on that point.
Yeah, they don't go into a lot of detail.
Yeah, so there's a spoked thing near the beginning of the book where they're kind of showing what everybody's doing, like in a wheel. And it's a counterclockwise wheel, which neither one of us was expecting. But the one person that is most looks outwardly most emotionally wrecked over everything that's going on is T'Lyra.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks angry.
He's definitely given up his Vulcan facade, the emotionless Vulcan facade.
Right.
Yeah, because when Data's crying later, he looks pretty pissed off. Like, disgusted that Data's crying.
Oh, is that's how you're interpreting it? Yeah, that could be it.
That's the way I took it.
Right. I just find it funny that they bothered, that Soong bothered building in tear ducts or a way of squirting out water to simulate a, and I know he's supposed to be fully functional, but yeah, I'm surprised he bothered.
If you prick him, does he not blink?
There you go. There you go. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Data, in the last issue, he had a
robot.
I think it was the last issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had the very robotic looking body from the Kelvin timeline.
Exactly.
And now in this issue, does
he, I think they just forgot.
Because they make it, I mean, he looks normal in his uniform, right? So yep, it doesn't look like he has that highly robotic, highly weird hipped robot.
No,
body.
And he looks has like normal bad. Hands. Yeah, no,
exactly.
100%.
There you go. 100%. He's got normal looking hands. So they were able to use current, 24th century, whatever technology to give him a better body.
Right.
And they wouldn't have had much time to do it. And it would have all had to have happened on the, on the Theseus. It wasn't like they went to a starbase or something.
Right. Yeah. There is no starbase.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So I'm a little surprised about that.
And also what doesn't make sense is Sato uses that weird line about how super hot her grandma was. Again, she did it once before.
Yeah.
And then now she's doing it again. And then when she gets called on it, she's like, oh, that's kind of a creepy thing to say. And you're like, yeah, it's your grandma. You don't say that. So I wonder, is that her like pickup line? Because, I mean, it sure as hell works. They definitely get
apparently
together
it works.
In this issue.
They do get together. I mean, it's in the shadows, but it must be her. It must be them. Yeah. Dushani and her. Yeah. And they're holding hands in the background. So Data is petting Spot. But in the background, you can see that Dushani and Sato are holding hands.
Yeah, she's definitely gone from angsty girl to love-crazed girl in the span of one issue.
I'm not crazy about how they handle her character.
Yeah, no, she's all over the place.
I mean, that's fine if they, she's, bisexual, whatever. Fine.
But it was just last issue or the issue before last. She was just so like, I hate everybody and T'Lyra lied to me. And she even blows up Pleroma. I mean, if you really think about it, she's kind of responsible for Lore winning. And now she's like, oh, I guess she needs a I don't know. She's all singing and stuff. So she just seems like a sweet little girl. But we know she's not. She's the devil.
She's the utility player that can just do anything that the story needs somebody to do.
Right.
Here you go. We need somebody to be angsty teenager. Perfect. You're a teenager.
So anyway, so that romance is kind of out of nowhere, because I mean there's not been any hints to it, because I kept thinking that they were hinting that she and T'Lyra had a thing.
That's what I thought. All of a sudden they're such deep best friends. I thought right. that was I thought that was good, the direction that was going on, but no. They didn't need that in this particular issue, so.
So can you explain a big plot hole for me?
I can try.
When they did the arrow shot, right? They're like, we have to line it up, launch, and then everybody's confined to their quarters until we get there, right? Because they got to conserve energy, right? They said they're going to shut down power to everything except quarters and essential things, right?
Yeah, required for partying, yes.
The parties, yeah. So they have like a big giant party where everybody's at. Then they have a wedding. So Sisko's making those little pastries, and then he goes and performs a wedding, and then he serves them the next day on the bridge.
They're very busy. Very busy.
Like, I thought everybody was just supposed to be in their quarters, hunkered down, hoping that they make the shot.
Well, I didn't know that they... Okay, the biggest thing that I have a question about is, and I mentioned it in the synopsis, is... They gave you the impression, and that's the way I read it. That's the way I did it in the synopsis. They had enough dilithium, recrystallized dilithium crystals to get them going real fast. And then they're like coasting
the rest of the way.
Yeah. Which fine, an object in motion is going to stay in motion until something is going to, slow it down. That's fine. But the only way you can go beyond the speed of light is that you're in a warp bubble that's able to warp time space. And so I thought you needed all that power, and you get all that power from the matter antimatter explosions by channeling through the dilithium crystals. And don't you have to keep the warp bubble going?
Yeah, so they act like the dust that they have to create the warp bubble was a one-shot thing. Like, which I'm with you. I thought that they were constantly creating the warp bubble, not that you could have one little burst and then create the bubble, and then as soon as that bubble breaks down, then you're back in normal space.
You'd be back in normal space, and you'd be sublight.
Right.
But they were not sublight. They had to go like 95,000 light years, which is like
right, the whole span of the galaxy Milky Way goes.
Of the Milky Way, right? Which, by the way, I didn't know was that wide, but okay. And they could have just picked that out of the air. I really don't know, but that does sound like a very long distance to go. So then you had to be exactly right, because apparently you can't use maneuvering thrusters, or Tom had to get us exactly in the right trajectory, or we could miss the whole wormhole.
It's exactly. Like, wow,
that's a hell of a thing there.
Right. Yeah. And you have to time it so that the warp bubble breaks as soon as you go into the wormhole, not just close to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's impressive. There's another good point. It's impressive.
Yeah. And I know none of this is real. So just relax. But I'm sorry. I just feel like being that nerd.
Yeah,
pointing
no, I'm with
out
you.
Problems.
Yeah, and so what Scotty actually says is that everything must be shut down that's non-essential. So send everybody to their quarters and close up shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see like people hugging, like they're not going to see each other for a long time.
Mm.
And then two pages later, the bridge crew's having a party, and then a couple pages after that, there's big giant parties and weddings. Mm. And it's like, yep. I guess their definition of confined to quarters is different than mine.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And that Agreed. Is Talir there in the middle of the big party, right?
It looks like him. Yeah, it looks like Talir left. I mean, so apparently Scotty got him good and drunk. So he's like, I'm not done yet. And he goes, with all the enlisted people or the people that are not bridge crew, and joins that party.
Right. And so that man that's like to the right of Talir, the one with the beard. Well, I guess they both have beards. Yeah. Is he the same guy in the next panel that's getting married?
He looks the hair.
They look exactly the same.
The face. Is it
different?
look at the guy that's across from him. So the guy on the right hand side.
I thought it was Wesley.
It looked very
at first.
Similar.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I mean, their face looks kind of similar, but look at the hairline doesn't look the same as the guy that's getting married. It just seems like they're using the same head, the same face over and over again.
Right.
Okay, let's do it. Let's flip him and put him on this side. We'll have that done. And then let's raise the hairline, but we'll put him here. And yeah.
Mm. Yeah, seemed weird.
Yeah.
And it seemed weird that they would have a wedding and a reception. If that is a reception, I don't know. But it just seems weird that they would have a wedding while they're shooting across the galaxy. But I guess it would take a long time, right? I mean, we're not talking warp 10. This is warp 9.99.
Well, that's another thing. It's like, I'm looking at all this, and first I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe this took a while. But it's like, no. They started this. They had the dinner. Sisko made the beignets.
Yeah.
And the next morning,
he's
passing them around.
Mm-hmm.
So unless he had two rounds of making beignets, this is like this is just 2 days, right?
That's the way I took it, yeah.
Yeah. Although, man, Sisko was busy. He was doing the... I mean, okay, so Sisko's going to bed, right? And Dr. Crusher is standing there. It's like, it looks like he's just going to bed and they probably didn't do anything, but you don't know. And then the next page, Sisko is conducting a wedding.
Right.
Which makes sense. I mean, did he do that like in the morning, the next morning before he got to the bridge?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. It just didn't seem to all jive, but whatever.
Whatever.
I just have one
last thing. Is that the main characters are hooking up.
Nah, some. Well, we definitely know two are.
Right.
You know, they don't really insinuate they are, but you never know between Crusher and Sisko.
She's not dating Picard yet, so.
Nope.
Who knows? Anyways, what's your last comment?
I just wanted to mention the IDW Dark. So there's an ad at the end of the issue. Find your new fear. And then it's a page ad for, I guess, IDW's line of comics that are on the dark side. So they're taking mostly existing properties, movies, things like that, and they're doing comic books based on them. So the recent Smile movies,
mm-hmm.
So they're gonna have a Smile comic, okay. Twilight Zone, okay. They're gonna do some new Twilight Zones, cool. A Quiet Place, they're gonna do one something based off of A Quiet Place, okay. 30 Days of Night. I'm loving that because I like that movie a lot.
Did you like the old comic books? Because it was based on a comic book.
It's based on a comic book. I have never read the old. I mean, I think I have those comics, and I think I did read them, but I'm more of a fan of the movie.
Right.
So I enjoyed that.
And stuff too.
I saw the first sequel, and I thought, meh.
Yeah, they really dropped off on quality after the first.
Yeah. One. Yeah.
All right.
I think the second one was was that the wife of the sheriff in the first one?
It's been so long. I don't remember.
I just wasn't that impressed with it. Event Horizon. I loved Event Horizon.
It's Paul W.S. Anderson's movie, right?
I think he was the director.
Yeah.
But definitely that was a very cool sci-fi movie, I thought. Sci-fi horror movie. It was very horror. It was like sci-fi, you know, sci-fi hero out in space thing overlapping with Pinhead or what was that? What were those movies?
Yeah, Hellraiser.
Hellraiser, that's it. It reminded me of Hellraiser.
No, I could see that. I wouldn't have thought of it, but yeah, you're right. There towards the end.
I dug that. That was good. Sleepy Hollow. I love Sleepy Hollow. I really like that movie. I think they did a very good job with that.
Yeah, it's definitely in the font of the Tim Burton movie. So
yeah, yeah. And then Beneath the Trees, where nobody sees the Rite of Spring. I don't know what that is, but apparently that's an existing property.
It was a Halle Berry movie that came out just a couple of months
ago. Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it didn't stay out very long, so I don't know if it was good.
Okay.
It did look good. Okay. It looked interesting because it was her and her two kids were in this house, mm-hmm. and they couldn't, they had to always stay tied to the house. So when they were walking, when they walk into the woods and stuff, they had to be tethered to the house.
Otherwise, I remember seeing previews for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I've ever seen, too. I didn't watch the movie.
I never saw the movie.
But yeah, no, I'm interested about the IDW Dark. And you notice mm-hmm. the logo is different, right? They took out the W. Mm-hmm. So it's just ID Dark.
Mm, ID Dark, right.
Right.
Yeah, but when they spell it out, so the logo is that, ID yeah. Dark. But when they spell it out, when they refer to it in the text, they say RDW Dark.
Right.
But definitely agreed on the logo.
But yeah, when I saw this cut, when I saw this for the first time, I'm like, okay, cool. ID Dark, logo is kind of cool. And then mm-hmm. you get to this next issue that we're about to cover, and they're now using that logo for everything. So not the dark part, but the IDW is now just ID.
Yep, you're right.
In that font.
Yep. It almost looks like it's in motion or something. Like yeah. it's like it's a little 3D. Like
it's going at warp away from you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
All right. That's it for that issue.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, let's jump into Defiant number 22. So we have three covers. First one is by Angel and Zeta. It shows Worf and Alexander, just their floating heads with some light in between them. And then below them, we see Ro, B'Elanna, and O'Brien on the bridge of the Defiant. Cover B is by George Corona and colors by Sarah Stern. And this one shows... basically, it's four Klingons fighting with Batliths. So I assume one of them is Worf and one of them's Alexander, but we don't know who the other two are. And then we see the Defiant flying above them. And then the last one is by Takashi Okazaki, and it's in the style of a Japanese Ronin type style. And it shows a Klingon, obviously Worf, and then Alexander, but Alexander's wearing a straw hat, so it's very reminiscent of like a what was it that comic book series called Lone Wolf, I think, or something like that, one of those old mangas. All right, so that's it for the covers. The writer of this issue is Christopher Cantwell, artist by Angel and Zeta, colors by Marissa Louise, letters by Clayton Cowles, design and production by Neil Yutaki, group editor Heather Antos. Editorial assist by Cassandra Jones. The issue has like a little page at the beginning and a page at the end of just text, and it's communications going throughout Starfleet, basically starting at Deep Space 3. And they're telling each other that they're seeing some weird anomalous readings out in the space. So we, the reader, know this is the lore wave or whatever they're going to call it, wiping out existence. But this is their first instance of in-universe noticing something's going to happen. Something's happening. So, aside from that, we get back to the main story. Captain Torres is getting used to the idea of being captain of the Defiant for a brief time and hoping that when she finishes her only order that Worf gave her, which is returning back to Deep Space Nine, that her exile from Starfleet will be complete and she'll be able to return home to both home being her family and also home being Starfleet. She's also worried about that said family because all her calls to Paris and the Theseus are going unanswered. O'Brien does meet with her, and he asks that on their way back to Deep Space Nine, if they could swing over to the Gamma Quadrant and knock out a couple of self-replicating minefields that are still being used to blockade planets well after the Dominion War. Meanwhile, Worf takes Alexander to the planet Beta Pinthae 4, where Alexander is going to undergo the Queeve rite to atone for his misdeeds back when he was following Kalis. The first step is for Alexander to admit all that he had done wrong. So he does this, pointing out the murder of 7 different Klingons and also following a false god. With the admission done, now Alexander must face the embodiment of those actions. He has to face off against a man from Martok's house, which I guess is some sort of mentee of Worf's. I didn't know who he was, but he's part of Martok's house, and they kind of imply that he's like a surrogate son to Worf. And then the other one that he has to fight is Alexander's own aunt from his mom's side. So this is, what was her name? Ballora, her sister. So basically these two are now attacking him both physically and verbally. And as part of the rite, Alexander is only allowed to defend himself, and he's not allowed to return any of the attacks or run away. Elsewhere, the Defiant does indeed go to the Gamma Quadrant and starts taking out one of the minefields. They're above a planet when a Cardassian battlecruiser shows up and practically declares war for their good deeds. All right, now we're back with Alexander, and he has passed his first test. He's bloodied, but father and son team are now back on the ship, heading out towards their second task, which Worf states will be impossible. To be continued.
Big Daddy Worf trying to save his son's honor, or get it back, I guess, because he's lost it.
I was really shocked he only killed 7 people, because I thought that number would have been a lot higher from what we saw during the Day of Blood.
Yeah, those Red Path folks were crazy.
Yeah. And Alexander was pretty nuts. I mean,
yes, he was.
He says he only killed 4 of the clerics on Kronos during that time when he was with the human captain. But man, I thought he took out quite a few more than that.
Yeah.
I just thought that number would be bigger. I mean, yeah. I'm not putting 7 people, but it's just, I don't know. So anyways, what'd you think? Did you like it?
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine. It was good. Yeah. I mean, at least this is a more grounded story than 2022.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is a little bit less out there. You know, you got Worf. Him and Alexander, they're Klingons. They're trying to regain honor. That is a very Klingon thing to have done or to do. So that's right. You know, that's pretty cool. I mean, Worf went through that, right? I mean, So that's cool. And then I thought, as far as what's going on, Defiant and O'Brien coming up with the whole, hey, let's try to take out these self-replicating minds that I invented, apparently, right. Which is a total callback to issue 22, where that was brought up when he was teaching at Starfleet Academy and that mouthy cadet.
Yeah, she called him out on it.
Exactly. So, you know, that, so when Cowles, so what came, so did he, did Cowles put that in issue 22 knowing he was going to use this later, or?
Oh, I'm sure.
As he was, you know, writing things and stuff, he said, oh, I could use that thing that happened in 22.
Oh, I'm sure he was setting it up back then.
Yeah.
Okay. Knowing that that's where they were going to go.
Because when they did that, it was like, why did they do that? It's like, I don't like that cadet. And it's like, what, you know, that seems like kind of a nasty thing to bring up for O'Brien.
Right.
I mean, quite frankly, I do not remember when they were talking about O'Brien coming up with self-replicating minds in Deep Space Nine, but apparently it happened during the Dominion War.
Yeah, it happened when they had to leave the station. So they mined the wormhole. And it was self-replicating so that the Dominion couldn't come back and forth from the, they basically couldn't use the wormhole.
But, so yeah, they were stuck.
But how they got the binds and then started putting them on planets in the Gamma Quadrant, I don't know.
Yeah, so they must have moved them. But how do you move a mine like that? Aren't they supposed to go boom when you try to mess with them?
Yeah, you think so. Especially if you had to like bring them through the wormhole, which, you know, is a bumpy ride.
Yeah.
So I guess somehow the Cardassians were able to get some of them, repurpose them, throw them over these planets, and O'Brien says like 5,000 people are confirmed killed or something. Was it 5,000 or 5 million? It was a huge number.
It was a big number. I don't remember. I guess 5 million would make more sense. But yeah, let's not be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what? So the Cardassians are being bad guys. I mean, I look forward to hearing the justification for using these things.
Have you never heard of Cardassians? Are they?
I know, but I mean, after they got all wiped out, so many of them, and Cardassia right. screwed up by the Dominion on the way out.
And they kind of seem like they turned in, you know, with Damar Jr. In that storyline with Sisko.
Right.
It kind of seemed like they were mellowed out a little bit since the war.
Right.
But I guess there's still some. I mean, we got one panel of that battle cruiser
and the Cardassian
saying that he doesn't even say they're going to war. He's just like, you know what's going to happen now if you keep taking out these mines. And she's like, well, I guess I can guess.
Yeah. And
I think she even says an F word in there or something.
Yeah, I think she did too.
I can effing guess. And then that's all we know. So maybe in the next issue, it's like, we're going to throw you a party. Thanks for liberating this planet.
But Lana, you're so sassy.
But anyways.
I got a question. Okay, let's talk ships. You mind?
Yeah.
I got two things to talk about, two different ships. Okay, so Worf and Alexander come to this planet. And it's a green ship, and it's got a boxy-looking shuttle that they take down. And the first thing I thought is, where do you get the ship? Is that the Romulan ship that sub-commander Make had that he was using at that planet, Antara?
Is it?
Is that what he did? And then I went back to the previous issue? Issue that actually showed the ship, and it was a green ship, and it does have two outboard nacelles, but it's not the same design. So either they weren't that worried about making it look exactly like it, and it is the Romulan ship, or somewhere Worf got a new Klingon ship.
Yeah, I assume he got it from Martok.
Oh, Martok? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Martok is the ruler, right?
Right.
He was able to hold on to power.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so it's apparently a Klingon ship, I guess.
So, but that little shuttle, you said it was a shuttle. I was kind of wondering if that was supposed to be like the bridge of that ship, and it like just pops off.
Oh, well, I guess it could huge. Be, but why?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so ugly.
Yeah.
The whole thing is ugly.
It's ugly. But if you look at it, it's kind of like a runabout. It's got the forward area where you see people normally sitting, and then it's got a big back end. So I thought it was looking kind of like a runabout or maybe a smaller shuttle. I don't know.
Right.
But
it also looks like it could fit in the little pinchers at the head of the bigger ship, and that's what I was thinking. I was like, it just slots in there and comes out. I'm making that up. I don't know, because you never see them together other than that one panel.
Right. That'd be an interesting design. But
yeah, definitely different.
Yeah.
But you're probably right. It's probably just a little shuttle, and it's just drawn to look bigger because it's coming at you.
There you go. So I just thought that made more sense, because they're all together at Antara before, right? And you've got O'Brien, and we know B'Elanna and Ro and Dr. Bashir. We know they're all on the Defiant, and they're going in one direction. And then Worf is going off and doing the stuff with Alexander. So you'd think that would make more sense if he took the Romulan ship.
Right. 'Cause
that way they can go their own way. But apparently, probably not. They don't look the same. So they must have given Worf a ride and then dropped him off for him to get this other ship.
Right. And we know that he being Worf, did go and say bye to Spock.
Right.
At the end of last issue.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So we know he did that.
So we know some time has passed, too. So that means that B'Elanna is really taking her sweet time to get home. If Worf's already had time to go to Vulcan, go to Kronos, and then now go to Aurora Pinthae or whatever. What is this?
Not Aurora Pinthae.
It's not Aurora Pinthae. It is
something Pinthae.
Beta Pinthae.
Beta. So, okay, so it's the second planet in the Pinthae star system?
Well, it's Beta Pinthae 4.
Oh,
so it's the fourth planet in the Beta Pinthae system. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Doesn't make sense. Okay. So where's Aurora Pinthae? Is that in there someplace? Yeah,
I don't know. Somewhere.
I don't know.
Yeah, I wondered why they kept using that word. Because then I was like, is this supposed to be Aurora Pinthae? But I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it is. Is it the same star system? Maybe, but I mean, there is a big time gap too, right? Maybe there's not a penal colony in the system anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
And the other ship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You said you had two ships. Yeah. Is it the Cardassian one? What other ships are in this?
Because that's normal. I mean, it's just another Galore class. Yeah, no big deal. It's a Section 31 ship.
Oh, that's right.
So we've got a four nacelle Section 31 ship, which we know in Discovery... they got their own ships, you know, the TV show. But now they're showing here that they've got their own ships. You know, a long time later, they've still got their own ships, right? 100 years later, and they're still rocking their own ships, which we never knew about until Discovery TV show happened. And I'm just looking at this ship, and it does look a little bit like the black, dark black Section 31 ships that were in Discovery. So there was Leland. There's a heavy cruiser. There's a four nacelled heavy cruiser that character Leland, who turned evil, had. And it's four nacelles, their connection pylons come together and then go into the main ship, just like this one
just
does.
Like this one.
That's the same. And then the head's kind of arrow shaped in the Discovery one. And this one looks like the Millennium Falcon, but you know, without the notch in the middle, and without the curve around thing where everybody sits, the cockpit. So that kind of looks like the Millennium Falcon. And then they've got a secondary hull that's, you know, kind of built into the primary hull. So it was kind of echoing a little bit Section 31 stuff from Discovery, and kind of also went off its own way.
Right. It's just what they've morphed into over the last 100 years.
Exactly, apparently. Discovery. But there's callbacks to what was in Discovery. Though I got to tell you, these nacelles remind me more than anything of the refit Enterprise.
Yeah, they're very flat.
Yeah. And kind of, you know, leaning forward a bit. And then they got those two little Bassard collectors in the front, right? Or like kind of split down the middle.
Right, right.
Anyway, it just, the nacelles reminded me a lot of Taw's movie era.
Yeah.
Ships.
Yeah, and I did like how when they see the ship, Bashir says, "Oh, that's a Section 31 ship." But don't ask me how I know that. You know, it's kind of funny. All right, so we don't
so much.
We don't see a panel with all the things going on at once. So are we to believe that the Section 31 ship is right behind the Defiant and the Cardassian ship's right in front of it? So they're kind of sandwiched in between the two?
I think so, but I think it's very possible the Section 31 ship has cloaking technology. So I'm not sure.
The destroyer showed up.
Exactly. So I'm not sure whether the Cardassian is aware of the Section 31 ship at all. So Defiant doesn't have cloaking, does it?
I think it did.
Currently? Does it still?
I think it did. In
they haven't used it in a long time. Oh, that's right. They used it when they went to that Orion station, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So that's the last time I recall seeing them use it. So they do have cloaking. Okay. Okay. Well, that's it for my ship comments.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about people because did you know that Alexander had an aunt? And who is this guy from the House of Martok? Am I not remembering something?
Well, I've never heard of either one of them. But as far as the aunt is concerned, you would have thought that if an aunt was in the picture, because of course that's the lady that got killed by the Klingon jerk.
Right.
I forgot the name. So obviously this young woman is supposed to be the younger sister of her, Worf's love of Worf's life, whatever, who got killed and then Alexander popped out.
We don't know if she's older or younger, but definitely well,
look,
a sister.
Look at her in this. I mean, Alexander is already... Okay, so look at this girl. This girl looks young. And the wife was killed, or the sister, her sister, was killed like, what, 20 years ago? 15 years ago? How many?
When Alexander was a little guy.
Yes. Exactly, right. So I don't recall exactly how old Alexander is supposed to be, but I assume he's in his 20s somewhere. So she has to be younger sister. Anyway, whatever. Never heard her mentioned before, period. And then as far as the guy, the young guy, never heard of him. But wasn't Worf part of the House of Martok?
Yeah. Martok adopted him.
Right. Okay. So they're relatives, sort of.
Yeah. So I just didn't know if he was
unknown thing.
Yeah.
I never heard of him.
Okay. All right. Well, I just didn't know if I was missing something.
I don't think you were.
So anyway, he's just
characters on the fly.
Yeah. But I really like the idea of a sister. I hated that she wasn't in it for more than a couple pages because.
Oh yeah. Pages.
Well, she only talks once. The sister.
Oh, okay.
His aunt.
The aunt. Yeah. His aunt. Yes, aunt.
Yeah, I mean, she kicks his ass and has a few choice words there, but she really only has character development in that one panel where she's saying who she is.
Exactly. Well, we'll find out if we actually get more out of the character or whether they're, or both of them, or whether they're just there to kick Alexander's ass.
Yeah.
It might not be that much more than that, but
I guess we'll find out. I hope they come back.
Well, yeah.
I would like to know more about him and why Alexander seemed jealous of that one guy. He's like, oh, he's the son you always wanted and I'm nobody. And I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah. And the other thing came to my mind is if there was more family on Worf's wife's side,
right?
Then why did Alexander have to go live with the Roshankos? But she would have been too young. I mean, if the aunt was the only one, then she would have been too young to do anything with Alexander.
Right.
So, but
what was her name? Kalir? Kalir?
Something like that. But
it was either a B or a K. I don't know why I keep thinking Balir, but now I'm thinking it might be Kalir or Kalara or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, we're trick experts here.
Oh, come on.
I remember that she was killed by the Duras, right? That was the whole Duras
exactly.
feud.
Right.
That ended there in Generations.
Exactly. And then Worf, of course, got his revenge by killing him good. Yeah. I did like that.
Yeah, the woman that played the mom, she played a Romulan one time too, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Susie Plaxen. I just looked her up. I had no idea otherwise. Worf's first love and significant other was Kalir. Oh, I think you're right.
Lady Q too?
I think she was.
Yeah, she and like Robin Curtis, they just like used a whole bunch of times and pretty big roles, but it was always We need a
guest star roles.
A very stern looking woman. Let's stick her in. Just change her forehead. She's completely different.
Yeah.
I loved Lady Q. Those episodes in Voyager with her. She's just so sassy.
So sassy. Yeah, what did she call Janeway? A pet or something?
Oh, right. Yeah, she calls all humans pets.
Oh, like a bitch or something? Or she didn't call her bitch, did she?
No, I don't think she called her that.
Something like that, anyway.
This was back before they cursed on Star Trek.
Okay. Well, she called her something pretty surprising.
Anyways. All right, back to this issue. My last comment was about just about the whole fight in general. I mean, really, he just couldn't fight back, so he just had to dodge and deflect blows while they're berating him and cutting at him.
That's right.
Yeah, it just seemed
weird.
That's
right.
I mean, I guess, and then he's like working through his, you know, because he does a lot of, I'm not the son you wanted, and blah, 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 I'd rather die.
Such a whiner. Alexander, right. You're such a whiner.
I thought he had gotten past all that with the whole Kalis thing.
Yeah.
Well, then in Sons of Star Trek, he seemed like he had made amends for his, what he did with Kalis anyways.
Don't they seem to be ignoring that, though?
They seem to be ignoring that, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's one of those things that they're not 100% sync.
I mean, maybe it was after that he said, I wanted to do something in the medical field. And then now Worf's doing this to kind of get him ready to join the medical field.
Join the medical field? I don't think so.
Well, you have to atone for all your sins by combat.
I don't think you need your Klingon honor to be a medical tech or whatever he's going to turn out being.
Sure you do.
Well, you want it because you're a Klingon, but you don't need it to be a medical tech. Anyways.
But yeah, looking at the next cover, kind of looks like Martok is the one that's attacking Alexander in the next issue.
Oh boy. Well, you're going to get attacked. Attacked by the big guy.
If you remember, last time we saw Martok, he was pretty much dying, and Sela had to like stick her thumb in his wound or whatever to get him to
cough up the, what was it, a code of some kind? Or
I was trying to remember what it was that he had to give her. But anyway, she tortured him to get something. Yeah. So I guess in that picture, it looks like he's healed up pretty nice.
Yeah.
We'll see. Just got to wait a month.
Yeah. My last comment is the cover B and the retailer incentive cover. You kind of alluded to it, but they're both very Japanese. They're both very shogun, samurai.
Right.
You know, big time Japanese Ronin, whatever feel to them.
Right. Yeah. So what is that famous manga about is it Lone Wolf or something like that? Where it was basically a father son type storyline. You don't know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know manga that well.
Yeah. Well, this is an old one. So it's like, before it was cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
All right.
When you started saying that, I was like, hey, that was more than I do. I don't know. Most of the mangas I knew about were like some of the vampire things. And
it was called Lone Wolf and Cub.
Lone Wolf and Cub. Okay, cool. Well, there you go.
But yeah, there's some, if you look it up, you'll see a bunch of covers in it. There's some that look like that with the boy in the straw hat and stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, now that kind of looks like the kind of thing, not that I know much about Japanese history, but that looks like a Japanese, maybe Chinese, I don't know, kind of peasant hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
something to keep the shade, keep the sun off you. You know, made out of just stuff lying around, thatch kind of thing.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Anything else?
I got nothing else for this one. Looking forward to seeing what happens in both. I'm looking forward to seeing how this morphs into Lore War.
What'd you think of the cover? The logo. This is the official IDW logo now. Well, I know we kind of talked about it, but
we talked about it before.
Yeah,
I like it. I think it looks good. Although missing the W is kind of odd, but I think it looks good.
Back in the original, when IDW started, wasn't it just an I? And then they added the DW, and then now they're going back to just ID. Oh, man.
I do not recall that.
Hurts my brain to think back that far. If we...
Go ahead.
I think the first one they did was Space Between. That's right. So there was like a light bulb, and then underneath the light bulb said IDW. So that was the original logo. So
I'm trying to go back to the older issues and trying to find one of the old logos. So far, I haven't found it yet. But yeah, I remember the light bulb thing.
Right.
Remember the light bulb, but
yeah, that was it. Yeah, it wasn't an eye. I think the eye is for image. I was getting them confused. Light bulb, eye, all the same thing. It's long. All right, I'm just talking nonsense. You done?
You are. Yeah, I'm done. Yes.
All right.
Should we talk about next episode?
Yep. So, like I said, we are all caught up on Star Trek. I mean, these books just came out, so we have to wait a whole month to do these again. So, at least for next week, next episode, we're doing a Star Trek Presents. And what are we doing, Ken? It's a big one.
It's very big. It doesn't get much bigger. It's a big Battlestar Galactica. And what's bigger than Battlestar Galactica? Two Battlestar Galacticas. BSG versus BSG. So, the six-parter, somehow, they've got 1970s original Battlestar Galactica versus the 2005, 2004 reboot? The reboot. Right.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica. So I don't know how they're going to do that, but somehow they're doing it.
And written by one of my favorite authors, Peter David.
Exactly. So when Donovan noticed that before we started recording, it was like, oh, cool, Peter David. We're into it.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's obviously written a lot of great Star Trek stuff, both novels and comics.
Yeah. I had just seen a video two nights ago on YouTube that was talking about Battlestar Galactica, you know, big splashy battle, space battles.
Mm-hmm.
And dang, they had some good stuff, boy.
For the reboot or the old one?
For the reboot. Oh, okay. The original one was crap. Well, for its time, no. The special effects for its time was the best you could get because they were trying to, well, they did use some of the same people from
Star Wars.
From Star Wars, and they used some of the technology. So, yeah, that was great for its time, but no. The technology they had available for the reboot is much better.
Right.
Anywho, it was showing footage from some of the bigger battles. And it's like, boy, that does look good.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really good.
Yeah, I always liked that show.
Detail, lots of, lots of ships, lots of fighters moving independently of each other, lots of debris.
And the camera work was really like it was somebody out. That just happened to be floating in space, and he would like zoom in on something.
It would be kind of jerky, and then it would zoom in into something that was really like that made it a little bit more dramatic at parts. And that was good. It's good.
So yeah, so I'm curious on how Peter David brings these two eras together. Looking forward to the book.
Whenever they do crossovers, how the writers are able to bring the franchises or franchise versions together is always interesting.
Yeah, so the series is 6 issues, but we're going to just start with the first 2 issues. So if you're reading along, just read the first 2 issues and we'll see what happens with 3 to 6.
Yeah, if it's really good and we're like, huh, this, we should keep doing this, then, you know, we can let Star Trek build up a bit, maybe.
Right.
Or if it's kind of meh, we'll figure it out on the fly.
All right. Is that it?
That's it, man.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll be back next week.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Get the hell